You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Well, okay. Well, hi. Welcome to the Beer Tour Guys show. We're doing this online via Zoom, and this is episode 35. I kind of waited a couple months. I taped a show 34 with Fenton Winery and Brewery right before we went into lockdown, and now this is kind of our first show for the Beer Tour Guy podcast, doing it on Zoom, and I'm pretty excited. I got a friend of mine on this time, and I've always wanted to have her on, and we just, now's the right time, right? Yeah. So, Natalie, why don't you introduce yourself, give a little background, and we'll just kick the show off.
Sure. Well, hello, Stephen with a PH. Good to see your face. I know you guys are just hearing us, but it's been a minute. I'm Natalie Carberry. I'm the head brewer for Founders in Detroit, and happy to be here.
Look at that. That's what we like. It's weird doing a beer show where we're doing all this remotely. Have you done many Zoom calls since you've kind of been in lockdown mode? Is Founders doing that for like meetings?
We have actually. We just had our very first quarantine quarterly production meeting via a very well put together collaboration run by our production heads over there. Usually we go down to Grand Rapids once every quarter and get everybody into a room at the same time and just kind of go over where we're at as a company, what we're what's coming up, and you know, projects. And so it was very interesting to just have to see everybody via satellite this time.
This is kind of like our new normal for everything. Today I'm taping the show with you. I'm doing a Berkeley Chamber podcast at 3, and then I'll actually have a Berkeley Chamber meeting at 7, and that's just kind of how it's been. My wife's like one room over, and she'll be doing stuff like this all day. This is kind of like what we do now.
New normal.
I know. So why don't you start with like a little bit of your background for folks out there to kind of get an understanding of kind of where you've been in the industry, maybe what you did before you got into brewing, and give a little bit of like your resume. How about that?
Sure. Yeah. So I actually grew up an hour north of Detroit in the other small Canadian border community, Port Huron. My mother's family is from Hamtramck. So I ended up coming back around to Detroit when I went to Wayne State. But I actually started in the service industry at a coffee shop where they had obtained a Class C liquor license while I was working for them. And lucky for me, the owner really had a thing for Dragon Maid. So I was in my early 20s and was exposed to good craft beer at an early age. And then I relocated to Detroit 2 years into my commuting bachelor's degree from Wayne. So made that drive a little bit shorter. And since I was already familiar with the product, I applied for Dragon Maid, and I actually started bartending there and fell in love with the industry from there. Then I took a second job at Motor City Brewing Works, which is where I met you. I started serving there, and I really honed in on kind of my passion and interest in the community and the industry. And I kind of got lucky. It was like a right place at the right time kind of a situation for me, where our former taproom manager, Amy Abbott at Motor City Brewing Works, recommended me for a job at what was a fairly new contract brewing facility, Brew Detroit in Corktown. And they were looking
where Motor City Brew Works is contracting Ghetto Blaster. It's all connected, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And I've been at all of them. It's kind of crazy. I've kind of bounced around a little bit here and there. But at the time, Brew Detroit, pretty much, I think exclusively, they had Atwater, and they had also made the first run of the Badass American
Lager. Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, that was a fun time.
I used to serve that. Like the first couple times I brought tour groups into Brew Detroit's tap room, we would serve it in a pitcher because everyone was so interested and would want to talk about it. And I'm like, okay, well, let's drink it, right? And I will say it was a cleaner version of what it was when it used to be contract brewed at Michigan Brewing. Mm-hmm. Rest in peace to that place, right? Oh, that's funny. So you really were there kind of right as they were kicking it off.
Yeah, I was. And actually, the reason why I was hired, I had never brewed. And I used to give tours at Dragon Me when I was a bartender. So I knew a lot about the process and I was always intrigued by it. But the opportunity never really presented itself to me. And at that time, I thought I was going on to get my graduate degree in environmental anthropology.
But sounds real intelligent.
Well, there's a lot of similarities between anthropology and in the craft beer industry. So, you know, in terms of a study of people, you know, they have a lot of things in common. So I was able to kind of apply my studies in a very real world way. But anyway, it wasn't until Amy recommended me for that job. And they had this idea that they wanted their bartenders in the tap room, which hadn't opened yet, to brew on their two barrel nano, their little pilot system. But I think they'd only done a couple of runs on it at that time. And I was their first hire for the tap room. So I ended up kind of just being able to show up every day. And as the tap room opening date kept getting pushed back and pushed back, I was able to discover the process of the production side of things. So I showed up every day and got to write my own recipes and brew them on the nano system. And as soon as I did, it was just love at first sight. It immediately fell into place and I realized like, wow, okay, this is definitely what I should be doing with my life.
What a great little system to be exposed to. I mean, that's a nice automated or very, you know, modern small system. Not many breweries would have something that nice to really get to work on.
Oh, definitely. I was spoiled rotten, really. I mean, a lot of people go through the homebrew avenue before they get a chance right. to work on this type of equipment. And yeah, I was really lucky that way.
What was the original tap room manager's name at Brew Detroit? Now I'm forgetting who that was.
Erica Brockberg.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I remember coming in and meeting her. And that's funny that I didn't meet you at that point. I don't think, did I, when you were in there? It's funny how this stuff gets hazy. And I'm like, did I? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe? No, I had met you at...
I mean, we met at Motor City Brew Works.
Yeah, I was still there while I was working.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Okay. Maybe I met you at both and just always attributed to Motor City Brew Works and just forget. That's kind of how this business works a little bit too, especially as you're bouncing around. I bounce around and work with so many different breweries. Sometimes I don't always remember.
Right, yeah, the faces kind of fuzz together.
Like, yeah, totally.
Was it Summer Beer Festival or was that when our
right. Yeah, that's true. So you got to have some fun and really start out at Brew Detroit on that system. Mm-hmm. And that was cool.
Yeah, it was amazing. My second recipe that I brewed on that nano system was an ESB that I had designed with the help of, I don't know if you remember, Jason Schreider. Mm-hmm. At that time, he was running production at Brew Detroit, and then ultimately he went back over to Atwater. So he was a bit of a mentor for me during that time and, you know, kind of took me under his wing, and he showed me how to the process of creating a recipe. So I did. And I brewed an ESB that winter of, I think that was 2014. And I was invited to the Atwater Christmas party. So okay. I filled up a growler of it after I finished carbonating and kegging it. And I brought it to the Christmas party. It was in the basement of Atwater in the park at the church. And by the time I got there, everybody was a little bit having the bag. I followed the screaming to find where the room was in the basement. So it was
I've never been in the basement over there. I guess I didn't know there was a basement over there. That's cool.
Yeah, neither did I.
Wow, that's fun. There, okay.
They passed around my growler, and it got around to Mark Reef, the owner of Atwater, and he put his hand on my shoulder and said, "You have a home here." And
wow.
Following month, I was on the brew deck at Atwater, actually. So I started brewing on their 20 hectoliter system.
Okay. Wow. This is a lot. If I was taking notes, this would be a lot to write down of like how you've popped around. I think I had everything in my notes written this way, though. I wrote Motor City Brewworks Brew Atwater. I had that. And then I had what you've done next, I think. I think I got it all correct.
Yeah, you got Fillmore 13 in there.
And then I got Fillmore 13, right? That yeah. So you're brewing at Atwater, and then Fillmore opportunity comes up to be an assistant there with Bo, who I've had on the show before.
Yeah, I heard that interview. Actually, you've interviewed some of my very favorite people.
I've had Lee, the owner of Fillmore 13, on as well. That's funny. I didn't think about that. Yeah. So. Pretty much all your bosses I've probably had on the show. I had Brew Detroit a couple months ago. I haven't had Motor City Brewworks on before, which is kind of funny that I haven't. But
yeah,
I've had Atwater on. I've had who was one of the brewers that left Atwater that went back to like New York or something. I'm forgetting his name. He had been brewing at Traffic Jam, and then he went to Atwater. And then maybe went to DC now that I say that. Ooh, I'm drawing a blank on his name. Crap.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about, and his name is also on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah. Sorry to person's name who I can't remember.
I was at Atwater until 2016.
And okay.
Then, shortly after I left, Bo had invited me to help him and Lee open up Fillmore 13 up at Pontiac. So that was just an incredible experience. It was a total blast. We just basically had the opportunity to turn this derelict downtown crumbling building into a functioning, efficient brewery space. So we worked with Matt Allen, who helped us commission that, I think it was a 10 barrel Psycho brew house.
Okay.
And helped haul in all of the tanks, place them in the walk-in cooler in the basement, all those serving tanks, helped draw pipe schematics and paint to me and everything, you name it. So I helped them build that place
brewery. from the ground up. And then a larger brewery like ours, mm-hmm. right? And then go to something where you're starting all over, so to speak, with this place in a neat building. I mean, that really is a cool building in Pontiac there.
Yeah,
I really cool space. Like it.
Yeah, it was kind of akin to opening up the tap room at Brew Detroit in a lot of ways. You know, obviously Brew Detroit had a bigger budget, but, you know, they had time constraints and, you know, all of those fun little hiccups that happen along the way that you just have to kind of deal with and adapt and then, you know, try and make them work. I find that all to be fun and fascinating. So it was the perfect job for me. Yeah.
Things are always changing, I guess. It's not all cookie cutter. Like if you work for a franchise or something and you were just opening up franchise location after franchise location, like it would just be like, okay, same day again. Kind of like how we feel being locked down right now. Like kind of same day again to a certain degree. At least that's how I unfortunately feel not working right now. But regardless, yeah, put that aside.
It does get pretty tedious.
Yeah. So you got to have fun doing Fillmore 13.
Yeah.
And you were there for what, about a year? Two?
Yeah, from the start of our renovation process till when I was hired by Founders. Yeah, I think it was about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So Founders hired me in 2018. I think I started in February 2018.
Okay.
I actually had originally applied for the brewing position here in Detroit for the head brewing position because I saw that they were opening up that satellite location and thought, I live right around the corner. At that time, I was in North Corktown. So I was just you know, and so I was like, well, you know, why not? And when I went in to apply, it had turned out that they had already hired their head brewer for Detroit, but they were looking for someone to replace him in Grand Rapids. So that's how I ended up moving out there.
And, so where did you live in downtown GR? So somewhere. And then you went to that brewery each day, the main brewery each day.
So I lived in Heritage Hill, which is kind of a short distance just okay. Jog down the hill, like a mile away from downtown. So
okay, oh that's cool.
Area. Mm-hmm.
So that had to be kind of a switch moving to the west side of the state. What was that like? Did you like that? Was that a little different culture change?
Certainly was. I mean, I lived in almost every bad neighborhood in Detroit prior to that move. So, yeah, I'd say it was a definite shift. I'm an outdoor enthusiast, so I really liked the idea of being closer to parks, you know, and being outdoors. That part I really enjoyed. But it took some adjustment. Lucky for me, Founders was my favorite part about Grand Rapids, so it worked out.
Yeah, if you were going to pick someone, that would be who you'd pick, right?
Definitely.
Lots of places where you can learn things, lots of resources available to you.
Oh, yeah.
There's just more pluses to it than minuses, especially since you've already worked at a bunch of places. So you really had a better feel for different sizes and the like, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, there I had the opportunity to work on three different brew houses. So I started on their 300 barrel brew house, which
you started on a 300 barrel brew house. Okay.
Well, believe it or not, you know, it was kind of the easiest to learn as a newcomer because a lot of the system is automated.
Right.
And the technology itself has sort of, you know, lended the ease of, you know, fail safe.
Yeah.
So it was a lot easier to absorb the process in that capacity, believe it or not. And then from there, I worked in the barrel house where we produced KBS and CBS, anything that went into a barrel. And that was an 80 barrel system.
So for folks who don't know that, the barrel house is the one you could see from the highway. That's the other location for the whole barrel aging program, correct? And then the main location where there's also the tasting room, that's the other location. For folks who don't necessarily know that, I know that, but sometimes people don't pick up on that. But if you're paying attention as you're driving to GR, you see it when you're coming from Kalamazoo to GR, don't you? It's pretty impressive to see right off the highway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Well, and the building just goes on forever and ever. And it feels that way when you're in it. And
does it?
If you can imagine, we've since purchased the other half of that building.
Wow.
For, another Savory Foods recently left out. So we're expanding that cooler. It's going to be twice the size. So it's pretty remarkable.
Is a lot of that have to do with like demand for the fact that you've made like KBS year round and variants and other parts of the barrel aging portfolio that you're launching? You're really seeing you're continually needing more space to age out barrels. Is that kind of the reasoning?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. When we started going year round with KBS, we realized that we definitely needed to expand in order to accommodate all of those barrels. So that's the main reason.
What's amazing to me is next year, KBS will be like 20 years old.
Hmm. Holy cow.
Yeah. Isn't it? That I didn't mean to make you spit out water or anything. And I didn't even know you had that KBS shirt on until you just leaned up there. That's really funny.
Actually, this is not water.
Oh, okay. What is that?
Well, this is actually our newest product. Still kind of in the R&D phase, but this is a Founders new lime seltzer.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah.
We've got a couple of different flavors that we're working on right now and looking to get them out on the market, but seltzer is in demand. So
who would have thought we'd be talking about seltzer a couple of years ago? I sure didn't think we would, but I've had plenty of it. And, you know, lots of other breweries and Michigan breweries have definitely been putting it out there. So it totally makes sense. The opportunity is there for sure.
Definitely. And, you know, that's part of this industry is, you know, you can take a classic, simple approach, but you know, in the end, the consumer is ultimately who you need to cater to. So, you know, that's the consumer demand right now. So we're going to make it. And it's actually really good. I'm coming around to it. Hey, nice. Solid gold.
So speaking of that for consumer demand, and we could talk more about seltzer too, but like I'm drinking a solid gold. That's just happened to be what I had at home. But I'd say for the last like 2 years that you've had it out, I've pretty much always probably had some of it at home because it's convenient and it's light and it's something that I can kind of rotate into the maybe 4 or 5 different types of beers I have in my beer fridge at any time. Mm. Right. And it's such an interesting price point. I'm not sure I believed I'd like it when it first came out, if that makes any sense. I'm sure you've heard that said before from people. Like, I don't know, you know, I was in the store and it was by Budweiser and I didn't know what to think of that. Right. I heard a lot of people say that to me at first, but I started drinking it and I liked it, but I like lighter tasting beers anyhow. And I'm probably a little more malt forward. And as I get older, I think I need to be enjoying more beers in this caliber. And it's not like you can be drinking KBS every day. So you need beers like this in the market.
Exactly.
To have kind of a wider range of a portfolio, hence what you're saying about the consumer and lighter beers and more healthy beers and this push with seltzer. So the seltzer program, is it something you're only working on in Grand Rapids, or have you kind of played with it in Detroit as well, or kind of how's that process work?
Right now they've isolated that R&D to the 30 barrel brew house in Grand Rapids.
Okay.
Something that Jeremy Kosmicki, our brewmaster, and Diamond Duchesne, who runs that R&D program over there, have been working on. Because they have the resources and the technology available associated with that processing. Plus, it's a little bit difficult to conduct sensory with a panel from between the two locations. So that's something that I've been working out since I've taken on this role is, you know, how do we get products between here and Grand Rapids so we can all have the same experience and really, you know, figure out what's going to work and what isn't and what do we like and what do we want to tweak, you know?
So that's interesting. That would be tricky.
Yeah, you can't exactly mail growlers, you
know? Right.
Yeah, sometimes you've just had to drive over there to drop it off or kind of figure out when a truck is going to come and send it back. So
I guess at least it's a lot of highway driving.
Yeah, yep. And those guys are our pros, our warehouse department. Those guys are great.
So eventually, obviously, the opportunity opened up and you got back here to Detroit and you're the head brewer in Detroit. So you become the head brewer and then like it shuts down the tap room for reasons we don't need to talk about. Right. And then it reopens and then COVID-19 happens and then it closes again. But throughout this, you are brewing and you are doing stuff. Right. Even though folks can't necessarily come in, that's got to be a weird thing.
Well, it's been weird, but I feel like I'm just kind of used to it at this point.
Okay. I guess you would be, wouldn't you? Like you haven't really seen much of a normal to it since you've been there, right?
Yeah. And kind of just my career in general, I feel like I'm probably the perfect pick for, you know, getting somebody in there who isn't expecting some kind of semblance of normalcy. You know, I've been sort of adaptable this entire time. So, and I don't necessarily mind. I mean, I'm sort of a natural problem solver and I kind of flourish in the kind of unpredictable situations, I suppose. So
that makes you a modern brewer because you've worked in a bunch of different environments already. I mean, think of how quickly you've done that. That's pretty amazing. Right. And I think that's probably becoming more normal as we have so many more breweries now and so many more people that have kind of come up through, you know, saying, hey, I'm interested to, hey, I've now got a little bit of experience and then opportunities present themselves, whether it's an owner, a little buzz that just drank your beer and taps you on the shoulder and you're moving into it, you're going to a new brewery or just openings happen that you say, I want to go after that. It's great to see that. It's funny because when I was originally kind of writing my Detroit beer history book X years ago, and I interviewed some of the early brewers that started in like the 90s, it clearly wasn't that way. But it's because the demand was so different and there's so many fewer places that there really were just a handful of people that knew how to brew. And most of them, they all had to know each other because they all needed each other's help at times. to make it all kind of even out. Where now, just within Founders itself, for example, for you, you have a lot of resources just within Founders that you don't even necessarily have to go outside of Founders for that help. Where I think in the 90s, early 2000s, it would have been probably a different game. But now you also know at the same time all these other people, definitely in Detroit. That's got to be fun. That'd be fun to come back.
It is super fun, and it's really come in handy. And, you know, that's kind of the spirit of the industry that drove my interest to join it, is really those original core brewers that had to kind of create this platform for the rest of us to build upon. And I have maintained connections with my friends and colleagues in the city. So there have actually been, again, because of the logistical concern between Grand Rapids and Detroit, where I have had to call or text some of my local brewery friends and get a brink of yeast, you know, or trade them for some hops. And that's been really cool, because I feel like that's why I got into the industry. So the fact that I have the ability to do that and still maintain that closeness and community has been really important to me.
And then, now, are you still living in North Corktown, or are you living somewhere else?
No, I actually, when I moved back to the area in September for this job, I found a cute little rental in Ferndale.
I think when we ran into each other, we probably had a whole conversation about this, and I just don't remember that part of it. In my notes, I was trying to remember, like, where is she telling me she was living now? You're in front of.
I actually don't think that I had run into you since I came back. I remember I invited you to the opening, and you were out of town.
No, we ran into each other at Brew Detroit.
That's right.
I was either doing a tour or I just finished a tour. I think I was doing a tour, and I had to leave. So like, I didn't really get to sit there and talk too long to you.
I remember that. Derek Reitzel, I think, might've been there.
Oh, that sounds right. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. Yep, Derek, who's the brewer at DBC. Mm-hmm. And how funny.
A friend of mine who's helped me out a couple of times in a pinch.
I had him on the show before too. I always say that was a couple shows ago, because I can never really remember that stuff. But we'll just say that was three or four shows ago, and we had a good time. Like I've known him for a while too, and obviously I knew him from Motor City Brew Works too, mm-hmm. and have been kind of following what he's been doing, and was excited when he got back over to DBC. So I brought a bus into DBC, Detroit Beer Co. I hadn't done that in a while, and I think I did that last fall, and that was a lot of fun. He was there. We did a tour. Kind of the olden days. And, you know, the challenge with that place when Detroit came back was it's a busy area. Mm-hmm. So it made it tricky for me to really bring groups in there, because there was always entertainment events going on that would not make that work well. And you can't, you know, the bus has to kind of pull up, drop people off. It can't just sit there in front of DBC across from the Opera House in the center of everything. So a lot of times I sort of left them out of my tour routes, which, you know, and I would do Brew Detroit and Batch because it's easier to get over there, or Atwater because there's a lot of parking, or Motor City and Traffic Jam and Jolly because all that's so convenient right there. Said it probably left DBC and Derek and what he was doing there out of it a lot. So sometimes I'll create a new route because I just miss seeing someone so that I can get in there and do it, for the same reason that eventually when we all get to start doing stuff again, I'll have to bring people into Founders Detroit, which I actually haven't done yet with the tour group. So I've always wanted to do it, and we'll figure it out. But I just hadn't found the right, you know, Founders has some of that same challenge, which is if something's going on at Little Caesars Arena, I can't just be rolling up with a bus group and think I'm going to like have you drop everything and let me roll up and have 20 people get a pint of beer and do a tour. Like that's not that easy to do. I understand that. So
yeah, that location has had its challenges. Parking is one of them. But especially during events, if there's something going on at Little Caesars and at the Masonic Temple simultaneously.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Like we had that happen not long ago with the Letterkenny live performance at the Masonic on the same night as a Wings game. And ooh, you should have seen the tap room was half flannel, half Red Wings jerseys.
Oh, that is funny. Really
divided. But it was chaos. But the staff there, they're so on top of it and really diligent. And everybody there does a really kick-ass job. And yeah, they were able to handle it. No sweat.
You really have a great, I can't wait to come in and enjoy it again, but you really have an amazing, varied tap list at the Detroit location. I mean, I always felt the same way with Grand Rapids, but I'm a Detroit based business. So like, I don't care about that. So like, I care about this. Right. So like, it was the first thing that excited me. I want to say I did a Tigers game a year ago, and then I came in before or after, I don't remember. And I was just like, wow, what a huge list. So a handful of those you're brewing on the system there. Right. And then the rest is kind of being brought in from GR. Is that how it works?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So for our main brands from GR, we have a beer supply coordinator who kind of handpicks and selects what we're going to feature from over there. And I've been trying to keep at least 6 or 7 of my DTRX brands on tap. So and I really like to keep a nice variety of more traditional, approachable brands or styles, and a little bit more eclectic, kind of bizarre, you know, spiced beers or herbal beers or something a little bit different, you know, to kind of mix it up a bit.
If you had to put kind of your beer, like the beer styles you kind of enjoy more than others, would you put yourself on one side or the other, like multiverse hoppy, or do you jump around a lot?
I tend to jump around a lot. I think that you can really limit yourself, and that's a little bit dangerous as a good brewer. I think that you should have a palate for everything. But obviously I have a tendency, if I'm going to walk into a brewery I've never been into before, you know, I'm probably going to order their lightest, cleanest thing, like a lager or a pils, just to sort of get a baseline impression of what their style's like. And I guess it just sort of, my personal taste, I change kind of seasonally. So like right now I really enjoy, you know, crisper, more herbal forward, floral kind of things. And actually because we're doing the seltzer game, I've been doing a little bit of research with that myself. So,
had you drank many seltzers kind of prior to going into the R&D phase for this?
Not, admittedly, not so many.
Okay.
No, it's not something that I would typically gravitate towards. But I've certainly, now that I see that there are a lot more craft beers that, craft breweries that are producing this, then, you know, it's something that I definitely have been trying to keep my eye on. So, but sours have been big on my list pretty much any time of year. I'd have to say if I picked a favorite, it would be a sour variety.
Okay. It took me forever with sours, and I'm still maybe only half in at times. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what'll put me all the way in. Maybe it never will. I mean, I've been to Belgium and I'm still not all the way in. So, you know, I've been at the motherland and had sour there, and I still, like, I don't know, you know, maybe it's because I probably like it sweeter at times and some aspects of sour. You know, I've really tried, I guess the advantage of having, when Jolly Pumpkin first came into Detroit with the tasting room in Midtown and I made it part of the tours, I kind of had to push myself to be like, okay, I probably was limiting myself and not trying a lot of sours. And every time I'd go in there, the staff would be excited, and then they would talk to me and, have you tried this? Have you tried that? And then I always got excited because the bartender was excited. And then I would try more and kind of venture out, right?
And that's a good bartender there. That was
it is a good, yeah, it's a good example. Like, I think a place that's focused on sour, you really need bartenders that are really loving that to the customer.
Well, one of my favorite challenges when I was in the service industry aspect in the front of the house, was to find somebody who claimed to not like any craft beer or claimed to not like a certain style of craft beer. And, it's always exciting when you can know enough about a product and gauge what that person's tastes are and come up with something that will be their gateway into that experience and get them to change their mind.
That sounds like, if you played back like 25 of my interviews, that's probably what I say all the time.
Yeah.
Like as a tour guide, like that's same thing, right? Like, yeah. Server tour guide, if you're taking people to breweries, basically, if you're someone who takes people to breweries or work at a brewery, like that should be your job. Okay. Because you're always going to have those people coming in there and they need to get out of their funk, right?
Right. And even if they're being dragged there against their will by their friends or family, there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to enjoy themselves.
Yeah. Right. Totally. And I always get a certain satisfaction, like at the end of the tour, where like one of those people will come up and be like, wow, you know, I really enjoyed trying blank and I never thought I would do that. I'm glad you sort of almost forced me to do that kind of thing.
Well, and, you know, I've noticed that my recipe style, now that I've especially been able to explore a little bit more of that with this role being R&D, and I've been creating recipes completely my own. I've been gearing my flavors towards people who wouldn't normally want to drink that style, to make it a little bit more approachable for them. So for example, the last batch that I was able to make was actually my first collaboration, in Detroit. And that was with a bunch of the ladies from Fermenta. And, I could name drop a bunch more names. Kim Schneider was there.
Okay.
Geiger. We had, Annette May, of course, a bunch of other incredible ladies, and we had a really great time, but, we chose to do a sour saison, not an authentic sour, unfortunately, because that's not kosher.
It's not the system you really got. Yeah. Gotcha.
Well, you know, using, Brettanomyces can be a little bit scary, especially with in a small facility, and, you know, Founders is a very, very clean and precautious. So
I got you. You don't want to screw it all up. I understand.
Yeah. So I found this souring agent that was developed in a lab, and it's kind of a lactic acid-based organic souring agent that sort of replicates those flavors and aromas without actually using the organism itself. So Joe Thorner, actually, from Brew Detroit, turned me on to it, and it worked wonderfully. So I added hibiscus and rose hips into the secondary, and it's created this really nice, floral, approachable, subtly sour beer. And actually, our new GM, Emily, said that she took a growler that I'd poured for her home to her husband, who hates sours, and had drank half of it.
Oh, that's good. That's a good endorsement.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the kind of, for me, that's the highest achievement. If I can get somebody to drink something that they wouldn't normally drink and love it, then mission accomplished.
Well, and I think now, you know, people drink a lot of different things. So whether it's alcohol or not, people kind of cross over a lot more than they ever used to, right? Like it used to be like, you're just a beer drinker. You're just a wine drinker. You just like spirits. Well, now, you know, everybody I know really drinks a little bit of everything, which means you need to be approaching things in that same frame of reference. Whether you're a coffee drinker and you guys are using coffee and beers like you do, or you like spirits and you guys have released a couple interesting margarita plays on margarita, mm-hmm. which are, how do I say that? I'm saying it wrong.
Masagave.
I'm sorry. Masagave. I was trying to look at my notes as I said that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was my friend's birthday gathering right before we all went in lockdown. That was her beer. Not the regular one, not the new grapefruit one, because that wasn't out yet. And she was funny because I feel like she didn't really read the description of the alcohol level well enough. So like we're sitting there and like she ordered like her third one. And I'm like, hey, did you read any of that description? She's like, it doesn't matter. It's so good. You know? And I'm like, well, I'm glad your husband's driving you home, but I'm going to call you like at 8 a.m. tomorrow and see what you think of that. You know?
Yeah. That's dangerously crushable.
Right.
That's one of my favorite styles. But yeah, I mean, that's really kind of the heart of it. As a brewer, it's so important to be adaptable and creative. Like that's really kind of the new age of where brewing is moving towards, because everyone is so flexible nowadays and their tastes are so dispersed and dynamic, you know?
Do you think it also helps that back to Fermenta and you doing a collaboration of other ladies, that we have some more diversity in the brewing industry that we didn't have, whether it's more women or just other ethnic groups that are interested in it right? Or a mix of all of the above, all that I've been waiting for, and it's exciting to see it happening. It's exciting that you and I can go this far into the conversation without me going, what's it like to be a woman in the beer industry, right? Like, I don't really need to talk about that. I'm only really mentioning it because you said you did a collaboration for men, and all that's really cool. And we're lucky in Michigan that we have a lot of talented women that have been in the industry for a while. And maybe we're, you know, I'd say Michigan was probably ahead of the game when it came to that.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Yeah. And, you know, I've known a lot of women in the craft beer industry here and there, but it wasn't really until I had all of them in the same room at the same time where I just went, wow. I mean, this is a really, really cool thing that we have. And really, really unique that we have the ability to come together, and there is such incredible camaraderie, and the spirit is just the same as with, you know, groups of men. But, you know, I think that, like, I never really considered being a woman in the beer industry a highlightable factor, just because, you know, I've just always focused on making great beer and working really hard, and not necessarily to overcome a bias, but just because I want to make great product. And I've been really lucky that I haven't really experienced too much pushback that way. And sometimes when I have, I think it's sort of one of the most, it's sort of an unseen advantage that we have as women, is sort of being unpredictable that way, or rather, you know,
unpredictable. I'm married, so I understand that word a lot, but I'm sorry. I digressed a little bit there. Continue.
No, totally. Well, it's that we're, oh gosh.
Oh, I screwed up your train of thought. I'm sorry.
oh God. It's on the tip of my brain. When people don't expect, I guess unexpected.
Yeah. I got you. That you're unpredictable. That I'm going to get
underestimated.
Oh, okay. There we go.
We'll edit that part out, you guys.
Okay. Edit that part out. Yeah.
I think it's a true advantage that women have, is that we're often underestimated. So we're able to really kind of flourish in a way, and then kind of come out in through application. You know, it's more important for us to work than to just talk about working, if that makes any sense.
It totally makes sense, right? You're walking the walk a lot more than talking the talk.
Yeah, I think so.
That's a great thing, right? Like, I have to say, like, you know, when I first started running my tour business back in 2009, I really thought the majority would be nerdy guys would come on my tours, and that would be the business. And I quickly realized that it really wasn't that way. And it was really 50-50 guys to girls, right? Almost right away, now all the time. And now, like, I have just as many conversations about beer styles and the industry with guys that I do with women. And it doesn't, I guess it doesn't surprise me like it used to. Like, it used to surprise me. Like, I'd take someone into Jolly Pumpkin, and then I'd talk to a couple girls that are on the tour, and they would just talk about how much they love sour. And, you know, and like, that shocked look is gone on my face now. And I really just get into, hey, what are your favorite places to go have sour at? And then, like, you have these great conversations about it. And it doesn't have to be just like, do you find it weird that you're a female and you like sour? Like, you don't even talk that way anymore because it's stupid. Yeah. It doesn't really matter. And yeah,
it's interesting because I did kind of start off in that climate a little bit. I always brushed it off because I just didn't care. I mean, I've grown up with boys, and no offense,
sure,
boys can be stupid.
We are stupid. So, yeah, I totally agree with that.
I never really took it with a grain of salt. But yeah, you know, it wasn't actually until I started working for Founders, actually, that question of what's it like to be a woman brewer sort of went away. In fact, I was trained by the highest ranking brewer on our team, which is a woman. Laura has been there for 16 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Laura Hauser. And she is by far the most, she is the hardest working, most vivacious, diligent, charismatic, incredible woman. She's incredible brewer. She's just the best, I think, brewer on our team by far. And she's had to do endure a lot of that as well over the years, but now it's just not even a question. And it wasn't really until I got to Founders that my gender kind of never even became a subject of conversation ever.
I guess that gives me a lot of hope in the world that we're moving that way. I wonder if we just froze up there. I hope we didn't.
We did. I think the audio is still working though.
Okay. No, we're all right. Okay. All right, cool. You just had an excited look on your face for a longer stretch there. No big deal. This is how Zoom works a bit though. So it's no thing. Mm-hmm. What was I going to say? I would say now the next stage of this is what we all think, which is, seeing other ethnic groups get more interested in this industry. I was really just saying that from being a tour guide perspective, whenever you have a more well-rounded group of people, and it's guys, it's girls, it's black, it's white, I had a whole bunch of Indian folks on a tour in the winter, and they were just as knowledgeable on the whole industry as anybody else. And I was excited to talk to them because they were, I don't get that enough on tours. Right. So I'm always how did you hear about this? Have you been on other tours like this before? It's almost like I wanted to interview them more than they wanted to interview me. And they're kind of I wish you'd just talk about beer, you know, but it's There's because I'm interested in that side of it.
Yeah. I mean, groups where everybody's the same are boring, you know, and
right.
If you have a monochromatic kind of environment, you're not going to breed new, exciting, creative, different ideas. I mean, you need people from different backgrounds with different experiences to lend an opportunity to grow and evolve. I mean, without the diversity, ultimately, a lot of these breweries that don't decide to make those changes will end up being dead in the water.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, it's funny that I guess I'd probably overanalyze that a little more now that I'm kind of in this more in a lockdown mode here, and I'm obviously not able to run tours for the foreseeable future. And I think through all those, how can I make, you know, new tour ideas that get different people out that I haven't had out before? I need to be thinking of things differently. But I'm also not getting to quite interact with people in the way I do, because a lot of my ideas, and I'm sure you see this too, right? A lot of my ideas over the years was I was running tours and I had customers and they had ideas and they threw it past me. And then I went back and said, wow, I'm going to do that. I mean, you must feel that way too, or you're at a beer festival and people are talking to you about what they're drinking of your product or someone else's product. And then that triggers ideas in your head to go back and be like, I want to develop this new recipe.
Oh yeah. Yeah. All the time. In fact, several of my last recipes came from those conversations in the tap room. And it's difficult right now to have those, especially if you're like me and you're a little bit technologically adverse. I'm not really one who's keen on using social media as a substitute for real interactions, you know. So it's difficult for me. But, you know, I like to think I still have the ability to be inspired by things around me. And I'm especially inspired by, you know, I can luckily still go to the liquor store and there's a really great one down the street with a wonderful selection and variety of local craft beer. So, you know, I really enjoy still being able to drink somebody else's product and get a little inspiration. Not that I would want to completely replicate it you know.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But yeah, I do miss that interaction is really important. I mean, and that's the cornerstone of this entire industry. And
well, that's what really grew it, didn't it? It's that interaction and people's willingness to think outside the box that's really got us up to this point. And really the breweries that are, you know, trying to etch out their existence right now are kind of rethinking all those things of how they can continue to serve customers. And some of these breweries are doing really good jobs at that, right? Like Founders is in a little different scenario because they're a large packaged products company and we could still get Founders, the majority of it, right, in stores. You just can't in bars and you can't do it quite in the tap rooms. And that's a little different. Mm-hmm. But that's all right. And we'll get past that and we'll get back to coming into Founders Brewing in Detroit and we'll get to enjoy everything you're doing there. I sure look forward to that.
Yeah, me too. Me too. But I really think it's great the way that some of these smaller breweries right now are able to sidestep and you know, rethink their approach and how to make money and still connect to the community during a time like this. I just recently saw what Eastern Market Brewing Company has been doing, and they launched a store and they're doing delivery and it's cool stuff like that, that they're able to do. Unfortunately, Founders doesn't have the appropriate licensing to offer delivery from our Detroit location. So we are a little bit limited that way, but luckily, unlike a lot of these other breweries right now, because we are so large and because we're able to sell all of that solid gold out the back door, we're still staying alive and able to keep producing.
So. Well, I look forward to, as I kill off the rest of the solid gold, I look forward to buying some Green Zebra because that was definitely my hit the last two summers, spring summers. And that definitely changed my mind a bit about Gozas. I probably didn't really drink Gozas before I had that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's again, one of those great, products. That's sort of a lighter version of the real thing. Just
right.
To get you in the door if you don't normally drink that type of style. So I think they did a great job with that one. That's a lot of fun to brew too. I do kind of miss brewing all of the major brands back at Grand Rapids, but.
Yeah, but you're still getting to have a lot of fun.
Oh, so. Yeah, exactly. It's so much fun.
So that's a great place to leave it. Natalie, I want to thank you for coming on today, doing this remotely with us. Next time, I hope you and I are doing this right next to each other, drinking a beer, you know, in a good old fashioned studio or wherever that is. Right. So that's, I look forward to it.
That'll be fantastic. I look forward to it. And we'll have to get your tour in to the tap room as soon as we're able to open up and be around each other again.
100% chance that we're gonna do that. So I want to thank you for coming on, Natalie. I want to thank everybody for listening on Beer Tour Guy Show episode 35 with Natalie. If you want to get more information about Founder Brewing, it's pretty simple. Foundersbrewing.com.
That is it.
Instagram or 8,000 other places where you could find their name, or go to pretty much any party store, grocery store across this whole country of ours, and you can get their great product. Or check out the tap room when they reopen. You can drink all of Natalie's stuff there.
Yep. And keep an eye on our social media page. We do have a Founders Brewing Detroit handle, I know, on Instagram and probably also on Facebook, where we'll be announcing curbside pickup, including some of my DTRX beers that we will be doing in growlers and hopefully, fingers crossed, crawlers.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So
that's a bonus. I didn't know any of that. Okay.
Yeah. Brand new information.
Well, thanks a lot.